All right. Ready to jump into another deep dive?
Always ready.
Okay. So imagine this. You decide to fund like a full-blown terrorist plot, right? But you know the whole thing's fake, like completely made up. You think you could get away with it scot-free.
I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, right?
Totally. But that's exactly what happened in this wild case from Michigan. People v. Genoa back in 88 really exposed this like weird gap in the law.
Yeah, this case really it throws a wrench in how we usually think about accomplice liability, and it all boils down to this thing called legal impossibility. Basically saying you can't commit a crime if the law itself like makes the crime impossible.
Okay, so break it down for us. Like, what actually went down in this Genoa case?
So picture this, you've got an undercover agent, right?
Yeah.
And he goes to this guy, Michael Genoa, with what seems like a sweet deal. Invest 10 grand in a cocaine operation, guaranteed returns.
So Jenna was thinking easy money, right?
Exactly. She shows up, cash in hand, ready to, make a profit. But here's the kicker. There was never any cocaine. It was a setup from the start.
Hold on. So he was trying to buy into a drug deal that didn't even exist. That's like, I don't know, trying to buy a unicorn or something.
That's actually a really good analogy because it gets right to the core of the problem, legally speaking. See, they charged Genoa with attempted possession of cocaine. Like he was aiding a crime that, well, wasn't real. And as you can probably guess, both of the lower courts, they tossed the charges, said it was impossible for him to be an accomplice to something that couldn't happen in the first place.
Okay, now I see where this legal impossibility thing comes in. But isn't that kind of like, I don't know, trying to pickpocket someone and their pocket's empty? Isn't that impossible too?
Ah, see, that's where it gets interesting. Picking an empty pocket, that's what we call factually impossible. You failed, right? But in the Genoa case, the undercover agent, he never intended to break the law. So there was never a real drug deal to begin with. It's like the legal basis for the crime just like vanished.
So not only could Genoa not commit the crime, but the crime itself was like a ghost. Never really there.
Exactly. The judge was very clear on this point. It wasn't that Genoa was innocent, right? I mean, he clearly wanted to buy drugs. But the problem was with Michigan law, their drug laws, they just didn't cover funding imaginary drug deals. Even if you had the intent, it didn't matter.
So let me try to like simplify this for our listeners, okay? Imagine there's a law against, I don't know, funding fake bank robberies. You give money to someone who says they're going to rob a bank, but they never actually plan to. Would you be guilty?
Based on what happened in Genoa, most likely no. If there's no actual bank robbery in the works, there's no crime to be an accomplice to, even if you thought you were helping commit a crime.
Wow. This is really making me rethink the whole idea of criminal intent.
Yeah.
It's like the law has to figure out how to separate what you think from what you actually do, especially these days when so much happens online, right?
You've hit a nerve there. That's where this Genoa case really pushes the boundaries of traditional criminal law. And it goes against how a lot of federal sting operations work, actually. Well, in many federal cases, just agreeing to commit a crime, that can be enough to get you convicted. Think of conspiracy charges. But Genoa suggests that, at least in Michigan, the crime itself has to be real, not just something people talked about.
So, huge difference then. So, let me push this a little further. Could a wannabe terrorist just walk free in Michigan? Like, if they funded a fake bomb plot simply because no actual bomb existed?
Ooh, that's a tough one. And legal experts have gone back and forth on this. This case really shows how differently we can approach criminal intent. Michigan, they seem to care about an actual crime happening, but federal law often cares about the substantial step you take towards the crime. Doesn't matter if it was impossible or not.
Man, this is opening up a whole can of worms, isn't it? I mean, where's the line between thought crime and actually trying to stop something bad from happening?
Exactly. And that's what makes People v. Genoa so fascinating, makes us really think about these big questions about the law, what a crime actually is, and how criminal intent works in our world today. It's a case that every lawyer, especially those dealing with sting operations, should know about.
Yeah, tons to unpack here. I bet our listeners are already like spinning with questions.
This case isn't all just theory and debate. It actually has some real-world consequences for lawyers out there, especially those working on sting operations.
Yeah, I bet this throws a real wrench in things for prosecutors trying to put together like a solid case.
For sure. Imagine you're a prosecutor, right? And you're convinced someone's planning something illegal. You go through all the trouble of setting up a sting operation, and then bam, you find out the crime itself couldn't even happen. Like, some legal technicality gets in the way, just like in Genoa.
Man, that's got to be super frustrating. All that work for nothing.
It is. And that's why this case, it's a wake-up call for lawyers to really scrutinize those statutes. You got to look for any specific attempt laws that might apply. Or maybe, you know, conspiracy charges could stick, even if no one actually did anything. What about those offenses like solicitation or facilitation? Those might cover these weird situations.
Sounds like walking through a legal minefield, honestly. This case really shows how important it is for lawyers to, like, know all the ins and outs, all the loopholes and stuff.
Absolutely. And for defense attorneys, this case, it's like a goldmine of arguments. Imagine you're defending someone who really believed they were funding, let's say, a real terrorist plot. And then it turns out it was all a setup and the crime was legally impossible from the get-go.
Yeah, that raises some sticky ethical questions about these sting operations. Like, where do we draw the line? When does a legitimate law enforcement tactic become entrapment?
You're spot on. The Genoa case brings those ethical issues front and center. It asks, should the legal system just focus on what people do? Or should their intent, what they're thinking, carry more weight? Especially in tricky cases like this one.
This is getting deep. I bet our listeners are connecting this to their own work or even just thinking about the legal system in a whole new way.
It's a fascinating topic for sure. And you know, Genoa isn't some one-off case either. The model penal code, for example, takes a different approach. It focuses on whether someone took a substantial step toward committing a crime. It doesn't matter if the crime was impossible or not in the end.
So even if the crime could never actually happen, taking a big step towards it, that's still enough to get you in trouble.
Exactly. And this difference, Michigan's view versus the model penal code, it raises some big questions about how we define and then prosecute criminal intent.
Okay, I think I'm starting to see the bigger picture now. This isn't just about one drug deal that went sideways, is it? It's about how we as a society decide what makes something criminal and where we draw the line with the law.
You got it. People v. Genoa forces us to think about some really fundamental stuff. What is a crime, really? Where's the dividing line between thought and action? And how do we make sure our laws are both effective in stopping crime, but also fair in how they're applied?
So much to think about, especially for our listeners who are working to shape the legal world.
And this case also makes us think about, you know, the potential for someone to take advantage of this. Could someone with bad intentions use these gray areas in the law to their advantage? Like doing stuff that's almost a crime, but not quite, knowing they might get away with it.
Whoa, now that's a scary thought. It's like they're walking this legal tightrope, trying to figure out where the edge is, and maybe even blur the lines a little for their own benefit.
That's why these conversations are so important. We need to look closely at these edge cases, these pressure points in the law, to make sure our justice system can handle all the complexities of our world, which is changing all the time. Think about cybercrime, or the challenges of prosecuting crimes that involve, like, cryptocurrency or online black markets.
It's almost like Genoa, even though it was decided ages ago, is somehow even more relevant now in our digital world, where things are so much more, I don't know, fluid.
Exactly. And that leads us to something else interesting about this case, that the court didn't really touch on the whole issue of RICO charges.
RICO, as in the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. I thought that was mostly for going after the mob and organized crime. How would it fit in here?
Good question, right. Genoa was all about accomplice liability, but it makes you wonder, could RICO be used to prosecute people who keep funding things that might not be technically illegal on their own, but are part of some larger pattern of criminal activity?
That opens up a whole other can of worms, doesn't it?
It's
like this one case has revealed all these legal knots, ethical dilemmas, and even potential areas where the law might need to change.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if this case could actually be the push that gets lawmakers to rethink some of the existing laws, maybe even create new ones to deal with all these new challenges.
Wow, that's a really interesting thought to leave our listeners with as we head into the final part of our deep dive into People v. Genoa. And we're back diving deep into People v. Genoa. We've been talking about criminal intent, legal loopholes, and even how this case might lead to some changes in the law.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. Who knew a drug bust gone wrong could lead us to, like, the foundations of our whole legal system and how it handles intent, actions, and how crime is changing all the time.
So before we wrap up this deep dive, let's kind of zoom out and look at the big picture. What are the key takeaways, especially for our listeners working in law?
I think the first big lesson from Genoa is that for accomplice liability, you got to have an actual crime. You can't be guilty of helping someone do something that, legally speaking, never happened.
Right. You can't just have bad intentions. The crime itself needs to be real, not just like made up or part of a sting operation.
That leads us to our second takeaway, which is this idea of legal impossibility being a real defense. If the law itself makes it impossible to commit a crime, you can't be held responsible, even if you wanted to do it. It's like trying to, I don't know, break a rule that doesn't exist.
Yeah, super interesting idea. And like we said, it brings up questions about like balancing people's rights with stopping crime before it happens.
And that brings us to number three. People v. Genoa shows just how crucial it is to know the specific laws in your jurisdiction. I mean, the outcome of this case could have been totally different if Michigan had a broader law about attempts or laws specifically about funding these imaginary crimes.
Really emphasizes doing your legal homework and keeping up with even the tiny details of the law.
You got it. And finally, maybe the biggest lesson from Genoa is how it challenges how we think about crime and intent. It forces us to ask, where do we draw the line between what someone thinks and what they actually do? Should simply having bad intentions be enough to get you convicted, especially when no one was actually harmed?
That's a question that's been around forever, and this case adds another layer of, like, complexity.
Yeah, think about it. Technology is blowing the lines between, you know, the real world and the online world. And that makes the Genoa precedent even more relevant today. What does it mean for cybercrime, for example, or for crimes that happen in, like, the metaverse?
It's almost like this case from back in 88 saw the future of some of the legal problems we're facing now.
In a way, I think it did. And that's why it's such a great case for lawyers and legal experts to study. It's not just some old forgotten case. It reminds us that the law needs to keep changing to keep up with the world.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's like the one big idea you want our listeners to walk away with?
I want them to remember that People v. Genoa isn't just some story about a drug deal gone wrong. It's like a spotlight on how intent, action, and the law all intersect. It's a reminder for everyone in law to think critically, to question assumptions, and to always be looking for ways to make our legal system better so that it's fair and it works.
Well said. And to all our listeners, keep digging into these fascinating legal puzzles, the world of legal impossibilities, a conscious liability, and how criminal law keeps changing. Stay curious, stay engaged, and keep those legal brains sharp.